We are joined on the phone by Warren Haynes. Warren, I hope things are going well for you. I know you've been busy. I don't know if it's a busier time for you or not, but it certainly seems like a lot's been going on. You released an album last year called Million Voices Whisper, and now you've got another one, which is sort of a companion piece coming out September 12th, the Whisper Sessions, and touring and everything else. So hopefully you're able to relax every now and then.
Yeah, you know, I've had a fair amount of time off, which has been nice, but it's definitely shaping up to be another busy year.
Yeah, and summertime, always busy, I'm sure, with touring and everything else. I wanted to talk about the Whisper Sessions. So this is, my understanding, sort of stripped-down versions of the songs that were on Million Voices Whisper. What was the decision? How'd you come to that decision to record and release this in sort of different versions of these songs?
Well, we hadn't thought about it that way initially. Most of them are just me by myself playing and singing some of the songs from the album. And there's a couple with Derek Trucks as well, and it's just the two of us. But I was just going through some of these recordings and thinking they're nice, like little bits of insight into the songs without all the full production and the whole band and everything. And they it just felt like it would be nice to offer them to people, you know. Like I said, it was an impromptu sort of thing. We hadn't thought about it beforehand, but I'm really happy with the way it turned out, so I'm glad that we're doing it.
That is an interesting way to approach it, because oftentimes, you get the final album, and the version you hear on the album is what we get to hear. I think a lot of times when you go see a band live or something and you hear the songs, they sound a little different. It's always a little different with the different arrangement and stuff. So it's an interesting idea. I like the concept quite a bit.
And these songs kind of work, or the ones that we chose anyway, work without the full band. A lot of my stuff, and especially a lot of the Government Mule stuff, wouldn't really work to just be played by myself. But
right.
Some of these songs kind of work that way, and it just sort of made sense. Sorry to cut you off.
No, that's all right. You're fine. You have written a ton of songs, and I'm always curious about somebody like yourself. You've got Government Mule. You're doing your solo stuff, and then a myriad of other projects kind of come in and out of your orbit. How do you determine, like, what songs you're going to save for your solo record, what songs you're going to record with Government Mule? Like, how does that process work? Are you like, hey, this is a really good one, I'm keeping it for myself, forget the band, I'm taking it? Or is it more of a, you know, like, I, how does that process work?
Well, it usually helps if there's an album project on the horizon. Like, if there's an upcoming Government Mule record, then I'm kind of thinking that way and trying to focus my headspace on songs that would be good for Government Mule. If in the case of these songs with Million Voices Whisper, a couple of them go all the way back to the COVID lockdown when I was writing more than I've had the opportunity to write in ages, because, you know, we couldn't tour, we couldn't travel. And so my way of keeping my sanity was to just write as much material as possible. And some of these songs go back till then. I had accumulated enough to where it seemed like there were a handful of songs that weren't meant for Government Mule that might be better done as a solo project. And once that happens, it usually is an indicator that it's time for me to be thinking about making a solo album. You know, sometimes I can tell when I'm writing, you know, where it's going to wind up. But sometimes I just wait till the whole process is over. And when the song's finished, I think, well, who would this be better for? And I still write a lot of songs that don't fall into any of those categories, you know, that I don't consider Government Mule songs, or that don't make sense for my upcoming solo record or whatever. And some of those may get recorded somewhere down the road, or may just be for my own enjoyment.
All right. Do you have like a massive backlog of stuff that you've recorded that hasn't been released? Like, is there a big vault of stuff somewhere?
You mean recorded stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, I have a lot of songs that have never been released, and some of them have been demoed, but most of them haven't been recorded like full production in the studio. I have a handful of tunes that would fall into that category, but I always have a backlog of songs that I really love that have never made it for whatever reason onto whatever project I'm doing at the time. And so it's nice to kind of dust some of those off when the time comes and see if they fit into what I'm doing. And, you know, hopefully make room for them, you know.
Sure. I was looking today, and is it true? It's been 30 years of Government Mule.
Hard to believe, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. I remember when the first album came out. I don't want to feel that old, you know what I mean? Like, I was looking at it today, and I was like, 30 years? That doesn't seem right to me. That came out, you know, 10 years ago or something. But no, 30 years of the band. What is the secret to keeping a band together that long?
Well, we all still get along really good, which is great. I think you can't really say that for every band that's been around for 30 years. But, you know, maybe part of the secret formula is that we didn't go into this expecting to be doing it 5 years or 10 years or 20 years or 30 years later. We went into it as a side project to the Allman Brothers. Myself and Alan Woody wanted to do something in our spare time because at that time, which was 94, 95, the Allman Brothers toured about half the year, and we had the other half of the year to do whatever we wanted to do. And Woody and I talked about doing a project. We were just going to do it for fun and maybe make a low-budget record and do a short tour to promote it and then go back to business as usual. But it kind of took off on its own and exceeded our expectations. So we just kept one foot ahead of the other, you know, and make the next decision and then the next decision and the next decision. And all of our decisions were based on what felt right. You know, it was never a situation where we were making a decision based on what we thought would garner more attention or fit into the current marketplace the best. We were just doing what was in our hearts, you know, and maybe that's part of it. You know, we never tried to second guess the music business or tried to come up with what we thought people expected of us. It was just like what feels good.
When you joined the Allman Brothers Band, and I'm always fascinated when somebody does that. What's it like the first time you walk into a room, plug in, and know you're going to be playing with those guys?
Well, you know, I had 2 or 3 years of playing in Dickie Betts' band prior to that, and that was a really good initiation period for me because we were playing big clubs and small theaters and stuff. So that prepared me in some ways for, you know, doing arenas and outdoor venues and stuff with the Allman Brothers. So it wasn't as big a shock as it would have been if I had just joined one day and the next day I was in the Allman Brothers. But the very first rehearsals were fantastic. You know, the way the original guys, the way they all, their chemistry together is unparalleled. And they were getting along great and they sounded great. And then all the new members at that time were bringing their own personalities to the table. And so the chemistry that band had from the very first rehearsal was very special. But then I was telling someone that when you actually walk on stage and do a performance, it's a whole nother thing. It's the band only stretches out so far in rehearsal. It really takes the audience to kind of push that band to where it can go on a nightly basis. And I'll never forget the very first show and what an experience that was.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like the first time I saw them live because that was a great band live.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely great. How long does it take you then to find sort of your comfort zone? And is it like in that first gig, did you feel comfortable immediately or did you have to kind of feel your way through that process of now being a part of this band that has been together for so long?
Well, we rehearsed for about 3 weeks and that helped a lot. And I think every show I was a little more comfortable. I was still nervous in the very beginning, as would be expected. But, you know, they were great about making us all feel a part of the band. And the thing that I loved from the very beginning when I joined that band was that, you know, with a lot of classic bands where new members come in and join the old members, a lot of those bands, it would be the original guys in the front and the new guys in the back doing like a supportive role. But right. the Allman Brothers Band was never about that. It was about equality on stage, everybody giving 100% on stage. And that's what they expected of us. And that's what we did. And so from their standpoint, you know, I mean, they were encouraging from the very beginning for us to bring our own personalities to the table. And of course, largely because so much of that music is based on improvisation. And so everybody's kind of got to be delivering. And it took me a while to feel more and more and more comfortable, but they were great at encouraging that.
Yeah. And that was supposed to initially, I believe, just be like a one-off, right? Like a reunion tour. And then you.
Yeah, it was for the 20th anniversary. They had released a box set called Dreams, which was a 4-CD box set of their retrospective up until that time. And yeah, it was just going to be a 1-year thing. But it was very successful. But more importantly, the music was amazing and everybody was getting along. So it's like, well, let's do it next year. And let's do it the year after. And let's do it again. And 25 years later, you know.
Right. Yeah. And then there's some great music that came out of that. So I'm glad that it worked well and everybody stuck around. When you made the decision to leave the Allman Brothers Band, what was behind that? Were you just at that point ready to go focus on Government Mule and your own thing?
Yeah, in April of 97, Alan Woody and myself made the decision to concentrate on Government Mule full time. We felt like Government Mule deserved that opportunity. And it was also somewhat centered around the fact that at that time, the Allman Brothers, the original members weren't getting along. There was a lot of infighting. There was no creative process, no songwriting, no recording, no rehearsing. And in the Government Mule camp, all that was going on and very positive. So we were just kind of leaning more and more toward that and felt like, well, this is our opportunity to really make this, give it 110%, you know, and would have never looked back had Alan Woody not passed away in 2000, which was a shock to all of us, you know. And so right after that happened, you know, I got a call from Greg Allman saying, hey, man, I'd sure love to have you back in the band. And I was like, well, maybe I'll think about that, you know. And so we did the Beacon Theater as a trial run to see how it went, and everybody was getting along good, so I rejoined.
Nice. Yeah, hard to believe those guys could. They never did seem to be able to get along for very long, it seemed like, in the history of that band.
3 years. It was always a 3-year process.
Yeah, 3 years. Yeah, that sounds about right. So,
with the original guys, you know.
Yeah, yeah. All these years later, though, you're still on the road with Government Mule. If somebody, because you guys are coming to Charleston also, you'll be going to be at the Refinery. That show is October 12th. Tickets are on sale now. And if somebody hasn't been to a Government Mule show before, what can they expect?
Well, every show is different. We do a different set list every night. Sometimes we'll go 3 or 4 nights in a row without repeating any songs. We try to do a little bit of everything because at this point, I think we have 12 or 13 studio records. And we try to, you know, just touch on a little bit from each period of that. It's, as you mentioned, it's 30 years now, so it's a lot of material to choose from. Usually we don't write the set list until a day or two before the show. And then even that night, if it doesn't feel like it's going in the right direction, we'll just call an audible and switch off and go somewhere else, you know. But it's important to us to play as many songs over the course of a tour as possible just for our own enjoyment and sanity, you know. And our audience loves that. They love the fact that they don't know what they're going to get. And it keeps a lot of people wanting to come and see more and more shows. I meet people that say tonight's my 150th Government Mule show, and it still kind of blows my mind that exists, but I think it's amazing.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because I know you guys change up the set list, but I was wondering, like, how often you do have to call, like, how often you're on stage and you're like, I know we planned on playing this, but it doesn't quite feel right, so you're going to switch to something else.
Yeah, usually we stick to it as much as makes sense, but there are times when you just walk on stage and the energy feels different than you thought it was going to. Yeah. And we just kind of shift gears and go somewhere else.
Yeah, and I think mixing it up is, it's got to help for your sanity too, right? I mean, I know the audience loves it because they never know what they're going to get. But I always wonder about those bands that they do the exact same songs in the exact same order with the same jokes in between them night after night. That's got to get so old.
Yeah, I mean, that's okay. It's cool, but I couldn't do it. You know, playing a different show every night just keeps us fresh, you know, and I think the crowd can tell when you're having a good time, and we're having a good time because we're exploring new territory and taking a different approach to the songs. Even the ones that we play more often are different night after night. You know, I'd go crazy if I had to play the same songs the same way night after night.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Now I know you guys,
even my own songs, you know.
Yeah. Are there songs though that you certain songs that you feel like you could just play every night, like they just like you never get tired of playing?
Well, you know, Soul Shine has become such an anthemic song in our circle these days that some people get mad if we don't play it.
Yeah.
I'm sure some other people probably get mad if we do play it, but you know. Especially in my solo band right now, we're playing it every night. In Government Mule, we're playing it more often than we used to, but not all the time. There are certain ones that get a lot of airplay, you know, some crowd favorites. But really, I think most of our audience is kind of there to enjoy the ride, you know.
Yeah. Now, back in like the 90s and 2000s, I know a big thing was tape trading. People would go out and you would allow people to tape shows. Do people still do that? I mean, because everything's available online now. You can buy the shows through like Mule Tracks and on Nugs.net and stuff. But do you still see people out there with that stuff?
Yeah, there are still people that come early. We have a special section available where the tapers can set up their microphones and record the shows. Our stance on it was always to tape the music if there's no money exchanging hands.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's been a long time since people even worried about that. You know, in the old days, artists were worried about bootleg recordings. But I think allowing people to tape actually helps that, because if the shows are available out there free, there's no reason for somebody to pay for a bootleg.
Right.
You know, it was really, it meant for us accepting the fact that every note we play is available out there. And so our worst nights were available alongside our best nights. And once you wrap your head around that, you just kind of, you know, Jerry Garcia used to say, once we played it, it's not ours anymore. It's yours. You know?
Right. All right. I was just curious if that was something people still did, because it feels like with the internet now and everything, it's pretty available, but it's interesting to see that.
Yeah.
They do.
Cause I do remember, I'm glad you mentioned Mule Tracks, which is MuleTracks.com, where we offer really high quality recordings of the shows and people can download them. And they can set their own microphones up and tape it themselves, because some people prefer their own recordings, and I understand that as well. But we offer what we consider to be a better alternative that has been really a cool thing since I think around 2003 or 4 or something. We've made all those shows available.
Yeah, and it is it's nice because you can go, like if people who go to the show at the Refinery on October 12th. You go to the show, and then like a day or two later, it's available on Mule Tracks. They're not super expensive, and it's a great souvenir for the show that you were at. You can hear the exact show, and it sounds great and everything. So, yeah, it's definitely a great way to go.
Right, and if you were at a show and you go, wow, that was a great show, I'd like to have a recording of it. Or if you couldn't be at a show and you heard it was really good, you know, it works pretty well for bands like us that do a different show all the time. If,
right.
if it was, again, if we were playing the same songs the same way night after night, it wouldn't make any sense.
Right, right. You probably wouldn't want to make that available, because I think a lot of those bands try to hide it. They try to make it feel spontaneous when it's 100% scripted.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Warren, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. The new album is called The Whisper Sessions. It will be out September 12th. And Government Mule will be at the Refinery. That show is October 12th, and tickets are available for that now. Thank you so much, sir.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you.